We are here live at DaishoCon for Nerd and Tie Live. On this episode, Thor: The Dark World, Heroes of Cosplay gets a second season, Doctor Who, Night of the Doctor, as well as wild speculation on the 50th anniversary, and we read your letters. This is Nerd and Tie.
Oh my god, you people are happy for this.
Well, guys, welcome to DaishoCon at the Kalahari in Wisconsin, Dells.
It's exciting.
We are the only podcast on the internet with a dress code, and I see that quite a few of you have actually answered that call and are wearing some lovely ties.
Which is terrifying, because I didn't realize anyone actually ever listened.
Like I said, there's 12 times as many people as I thought would be here.
It's amazing.
It's great. But anyway, I'm one of your hosts, Professor Fur. With me, as always, is the intrepid Nick Azumi.
Live long, but please think about when you prosper. Just think about it.
And the always fantastic Trey Dorn.
I am verifiably wearing pants today.
It's really weird that I actually had a dress for this recording. Like, normally I'm just sitting in the apartment wearing nothing but a tie and, like, pajama bottoms.
Well, it's because normally we record this on Sunday nights from disparate cities over Skype. So this is the first time we've ever all actually been in the same room recording this podcast.
And it's kind of awesome, so...
I don't know where to look. Normally I'm playing with Transformers while I'm doing this.
and Nick can actually see it when I flip him off right now.
But we've got a good show this time around for the first ever live episode of Nerd and Tie. And I think we could probably get started with, of course, Thor: The Dark World just came out about...
4 weeks ago, three weeks ago.
It just came out 3 weeks ago.
But we could finally talk about it because Nick has finally seen it.
Did you just see it Thursday night or something?
I saw it Thursday night. Yeah. I'm sorry. I guess I didn't have as much time with my family and one of them being very sick.
Family illness should not get in the way of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Bring them with. It'll cheer them up.
And Thor: The Dark World would indeed cheer people up because I really, really enjoyed this movie.
As did I.
Yeah, so I thought it was fantastic. Really thought it was fun. It didn't knock my socks off like some of the... Like, Iron Man 3 honestly knocked my socks off. Avengers, of course, knocked my socks off.
Yeah.
But, it didn't knock my socks off, but I was really entertained by this movie.
See, while I liked Iron Man 3, and I thought it was pretty good, I actually liked Thor: The Dark World more than I liked Iron Man
3. I agree that it is the better of the Phase 2 movies thus far.
Out of the whole two
that we have.
Two in a television series.
Yeah. I'll be honest, anything is better than... Well, okay, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is all right.
The last two episodes were decent.
It's building into it.
I'm enjoying Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Well, okay, so Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., I like the show. It's good. But it started out much weaker than I expected, especially for a Joss Whedon series. And I feel like the first couple episodes especially were weak. I think now that they're finally giving some development to the characters I like to refer to as Handsome Spy and Pretty Girl Hacker.
They're finally getting '90s.
They're finally getting some characterization that like kind of humanizes them more. And frankly, anything more with Fitz and Simmons makes me happy. So I think,
I'd say I'm coming back every week for Fitz Simmons. That's
yeah.
Now they had a tie-in to Thor last week, did they not?
Yeah, and they had to clean up the mess after Thor 2.
I didn't see the episode. I'm guessing that it had to do with that at the end credits where that was that creature from one of the worlds.
No, absolutely nothing to do with that. Nothing at all.
That would have been great.
We're probably never going to tie that up.
Well, you have to understand, that was my first thought, like when the scene when they led into the actual storyline for the episode happened. I thought that's what they were going and then went a whole other direction. But it does involve an Asgardian. I'll give you that.
Okay,
that's kind of fun.
And that is kind of my favorite part of the movie was everything switching between the different worlds. I called it the Scooby-Doo running through doors effect. So it's
the
just
portal
like
fight.
Mjolnir is going and that way.
Mjolnir getting confused.
Eccleston.
Mjolnir getting confused.
Mew mew. I need more Kat Dennings.
Yeah, more Kat Dennings.
She is wasted on Two Broke Girls, which is an awful series.
But
because it's full of racism.
It is. And as always, Tom Hiddleston pretty much shined whenever he was on screen. Totally stole the show whenever he was.
Even if he looked like Tommy Wiseau in one
scene. That was a heartbreaking scene.
Yeah, actually.
Oh, well,
why did they put that in the trailer? Why do they put that in the trailer? Because, like...
Because we're all making fun of it for months, and then we get there.
And then we're like, holy... Oh, my God. That's what happened. Just the whole part of, like, you can cut the illusions, and then it cuts away, and he's there, and clearly he's been neglecting himself, and it's just, oh...
Yeah, like, every time I said, oh, hi, Thor, I felt bad for every one of those, which, let me tell you, was about half of my Tumblr posts for about a month, so...
I still regret that we didn't show up as Thor and Loki wearing suits, throwing a football back and forth at the premiere.
Oh, dear.
Can I... One other thing that really impressed me, I don't know if you can call it cinematography because so much of it was CG, but the funeral scene was beautiful.
Yeah, that took my breath away.
Yeah.
That was just perfect. I was actually tearing up in the theater during that. That was really well done.
I think Asgard might be one of the one of my favorite places in the Marvel Cinematic Universe because it's just so big and shiny and everything.
Because it looks like Asgard.
It looks like Asgard, yeah. And I'm so distracted every time I watch Thor: The Dark World now. Just anytime they're there because it's just.
I'm just glad they gave Heimdall more to do in this film because every film needs more Idris Elba.
Idris Elba, god of hot dads.
And all I'm saying is Idris Elba for Jon Stewart.
Yeah, I agree. Well,
He
responded to that on Twitter. Somebody made a fan tweet poster, and he's like, that would be awesome, but it's never going to happen. We've seen the nerd community do some pretty great things. I think this is something that we can make happen. Idris Elba as Jon Stewart for the new Green Lantern.
Well, and unlike the Donald Glover, we're not asking for a canon change.
No.
Although Donald Glover would have been a better Spider-Man. I liked the Amazing Spider-Man. Although I will say I did not need to see Uncle Ben die again.
The only thing worse than Uncle Ben dying is Martin Sheen as Uncle Ben dying, because then it's like double, oh, the horror. The horror.
Well, okay, so it's like, that's why, like, I pray to God they do not reboot Spider-Man again in my lifetime, because my God, you know the whole first third of the movie you're waiting for Uncle Ben to die every single time, because it's not a secret. Like, I'm like, if you want to, like, recast Spider-Man or something, just put it later in his career. We all know the story. We all know Uncle Ben's going to die. We all know we got picked on in high school. Give us some of the stories about, you know, mid-20s Spider-Man from the 90s, you know, before the clone saga.
My biggest disappointment about... Actually, it's funny you mention that, because my biggest disappointment of Spider-Man 3, I was really hoping when they had Harry as New Goblin that they were going to adapt Spectacular Spider-Man 200 when Harry dies. That was a beautiful comic.
That would have been great.
That was...
But Thor.
Thor, yeah. We don't need to talk about Spider-Man. That could be... That's going to be probably coming up very soon in another episode. But,
Do you guys think we could have used more Chris Eccleston? Because I could have used more
I felt he was sorely underused in it. I felt like that was a sideline villain. Like,
yeah.
Like, well, you know, here's the thing. If I didn't know it was him ahead of time, I wouldn't have known it was him.
Well, what was weird is he has that great voice.
And they digitally processed the heck out of it. Yeah,
that's what I was wondering
about.
His
best feature.
That's what I was wondering. I'm like, there's no way that this is just Eccleston doing this. Did they dub over him?
They just tossed a filter on it.
Was that, as the movie went on, they actually put more digital filter over his voice, and it made it worse, because at the beginning, I'm like, well, I can kind of hear the fantastic, but then by the end of the movie, there's no hint of Eccleston in there. And that's total waste.
Yeah, he was sorely underused. I never felt like... What was Malkar?
Makalaka.
I felt like
Mocha Chica.
I never, whenever he was on screen, as much as I love Chris Eccleston, it's just like, you guys aren't using him. Why, like, this is just a side plot. The whole thing with the Aether is just,
like,
I'm not threatened.
But you know what, frankly, if our biggest complaint about the film is that a great actor was underused in it,
And
we don't have any other complaints, I think that's pretty high praise.
Yeah, I didn't feel like there was anything that was really bad about the movie. Like, there was stuff that I wish I had more of, but that's not the same as something not working.
And what's even better is now we have even more setup for Guardians of the Galaxy when Thanos takes the screen. So I'm really excited about that.
Do you guys, whenever you see people leaving the Marvel movies before the credit, the after credit sequence, do you want to just say, sit down?
What is wrong with these people?
Yeah, people are doing that at the end of it. It's like, have you learned nothing from the last 5 years?
Like, all but, like, 10 of us left, only 10 of us were left in the theater out of a full theater, like, when the credits rolled. And I'm like, what? Don't you want to see the
end?
We've
done this 7 times now.
I mean, don't you want to see the shawarma?
And actually, I did think this was the best post-credit scene probably since the first Iron Man movie.
Which of the two post-credit scenes? Are we talking about the collector?
The collector scene.
Yeah.
The setup for that, for the Infinity Gauntlet that's going to happen, so.
Yeah.
Benicio del Toro. Very.
Yeah. Benicio del Toro playing Benicio del Toro.
Pretty much.
Because he's just like that. Did you guys like Thor 2?
Yes.
For the audio listeners at home, they were giving a thumbs up.
And there was cheering and
you couldn't hear.
There were smiles.
Because we are live here at DiceoCon.
And clearly this is a crowd of 20,000 in here, and we just have really good sound noise-canceling mics.
It's very excellent. If you are one of the not 20,000 people at DiceoCon at the Kalahari Resort listening to Nerd and Tie Live, contact us at
nerdandtie.trhonline.com.
Click on the contact form and let us know. I'm going to get this one.
Someday you'll actually get it.
Button that says contact on our website. It's there. People have found it. We've gotten mail.
We'll get to that later. But I think next, what do we got next on our list?
Well, next up is completely unrelated to Thor.
Do we have to do this?
Yet again, making the tag bigger in our archive tag cloud. Heroes of Cosplay has had its season extended.
Wow, people are booing louder for this than they were cheering for Thor.
Okay, so they're calling it an extension of the first season, but it's just six more episodes, and they're not going to air until 2014, and they haven't shot any of them yet, so it's kind of, technically it's not season two, but it's really like a fresh season of Yahya Han acting like a wooden doll. Technically, we don't know who's involved in the season.
But it's probably going to be Yahya Han.
Yeah. Well, they're casting some new cosplayers, we know. We know that because they put out a casting call. Here's my thing. They want to do more seasons. What con lets them come into their event? There's so many tales of Heroes of Cosplay completely like taking over cosplay contests, like dominating areas of the con, kicking them out, causing so much like problems with the like actual event. What convention lets them in? How desperate does a con have to be to let them in the door?
All you have to do is say, hey, we're going to put you on a major cable network, and people do this sort of thing. Like
I think the bigger question is, who is still watching this?
Yeah, exactly.
I really want to know that. Like, well, who is demanding more episodes?
I'm not demanding more. I bought some of the episodes on iTunes because I had to watch it for this. How can I make fun of
I'll be honest, I watched the first episode, like when we were doing that episode on Heroes of Cosplay, I watched the first episode just so I could at least know vaguely what was going on, and I've never watched one since.
Same.
This was
really?
This was so awful, I cannot go on after this.
I couldn't get through more than that first one.
I can't stand any of these people. These are some of the worst people I've ever seen on television. Just
Some of the people, like, actually, I will give mad props to Chloe Dextra, who, like, actually had the right attitude the whole show.
She was the Merida?
No.
No.
That's Becky. You didn't see any episodes with Chloe Dextra because you only watched the first episode.
Okay, well,
I'm sorry, I don't know the names of these people. I didn't want to know
she's
them.
She has an internet television show that's existed for a while before that, but she's also the person.
What does she do? Is that?
I think it's on Revision 3. I don't remember the name of it, she had never done competitive cosplay before, but she also, like, in one of the casual conversations, in giant air quotes, that they set up with the people, she was the person who defended people of any size cosplaying whatever they wanted.
Oh, that's good.
Well, while she got called naive by the rest of the entire cast, including Yahya Han, I'm not going to say I want Yahya Han to get hit by a truck. I'm just saying I wouldn't necessarily be the one to push her out of the way.
Wow.
I wouldn't go that far, but I really hope someone spills their Legos outside her room and that she steps on at least one of them.
Yes.
So if you have a Nielsen box or a Nielsen book and you're watching Heroes of Cosplay,
you're everything that is wrong with
this
country.
We hate you and want you to get lit on fire. You don't have to die. Just get mildly injured.
Some eyebrows.
Just an eyebrow singed. Maybe lose all your arm hair.
Going off of what Nick asked, like, who's even watching this? I think we've all agreed. At least.
Oh my God! Have you checked the Tumblr tags?
No, I haven't.
People who love it.
Because to me, and I said this in one of our earlier episodes, it embodies everything that I can't stand about the cosplay. Like,
exactly.
I love the cosplay world. The cosplay, like, cosplay is fun. It's supposed to be fun. You're supposed to be able to dress up and be whatever you want. And then I see the show that's seen by millions of people, basically, where I can just think of the one girl, I don't remember her name, the Merida cosplayer, where she had a whole segment about, oh, I've got to go to the gym. And
yeah.
Her body, like...
She had massive...
body image issues.
Body image
and it's just
problems.
Like, why are we...
Where she's a perfectly lovely woman who does not need to lose any weight, and yet she's stressing out that she might be too heavy to play Merida, was insane.
Yeah, and it's just, why are we pushing this on people who, if this is their first experience of what cosplay is, this isn't what cosplay is.
This makes all of us look bad, everyone.
It's not even a good representation of competitive cosplay, and I can say this as a person who has been involved in running cosplay contests for the better part of a decade. I've been a judge. I used to do cosplay back in the 90s as a cosplayer. I have a very elaborate Klingon forehead in my closet.
Was this during your Ranma 1/2 fan fiction writing?
Yes. Actually, yes. These were the same years. Hey, I own my past. I've been hosting cosplay contests for a really long time, and it's not a good it's not an accurate representation. There were only I think one or two of the episodes did they have did they go to a con with prejudging?
A convention that big, you can't not do that.
Now, to be fair, like the Wizard World cons, we found out later, apparently don't do any prejudging, and that's why I'm like, why is that though a serious competition for Heroes of Cosplay? And it's called the cons that let them in the door. It's these are the cons that let them film and let them take over and let them dominate. And that's
because they have so much money already that it's not really going to matter.
Well, that's just cosplay is all about fabulous cash prizes. It's definitely not or love of characters.
You mean cash prizes that were funded by the production company that made the reality TV series?
Yeah, those cash prizes.
Yeah. But so yeah,
I don't
think
we like this show.
Yaya Han. No,
you know what?
Her costumes are good, but, like, watching her make them just makes me want to yell things at my television. Just, like, how can you be such a terrible human being? I don't understand this.
Actually, there's
she's just wearing it and not being the character.
But that's a different school. Like, there are different schools of thoughts on cosplay. For whether or not, like, for those at home listening to this on their iPods, iPhones, and computers, someone was criticizing Yaya Han's cosplay, but you couldn't hear her because the microphone for recording us is pointed at us. I'll say, like, the criticism was that Yaya Han does not try to become the character while cosplaying. And I think that there is... some people like to do that, but some people just don't. And I don't think there's necessarily anything wrong with that.
Oh, she absolutely treats
it as a job.
I feel bad for the people at home who did not hear the other what we're reacting to. The criticism was that she treats it more like a job.
And I think that was in the first episode. I think she said something about how can I make money at this convention or something like that.
Well, okay, so I feel like I'm going to defend Yaya Han for a second, going to be out of character and will probably never happen again. So everybody... I will say there is another documentary that she appears in that was made by PBS about cosplay, which is an excellent documentary. I cannot remember the title.
It's what's his face's
Ken Burns civil cosplay.
No, he did. He did like Morgan Spurlock. Was that Morgan Spurlock's?
I don't know. No, Morgan Spurlock did an excellent thing about that involved cosplayers, but it was also just about Comic-Con in general.
Gotcha. Okay.
Which had some of the other cosplayers.
Dearest mother, someday I will dress.
Crabcat was in the Morgan Spurlock documentary, and that's why I was really disappointed with Crabcat during Heroes of Cosplays for some of their stuff when I had already like respected them as cosplay. But Yaya Han, actually, there's a really good documentary which actually kind of shows a much more human and less edited Yaya Han. It's on PBS has it streaming on their website. I wish I could tell you what it was called. I think it involved like a secret identity in the title, but. Yeah, first off, it shows actually the hours of work she actually does do on her own cosplay, which I think is completely left out. Like, if you watch the series,
her yelling at her boyfriend.
Yeah, it looks like her significant other does all the work, which is, you know...
You know, I actually, if anything, I almost feel bad for Yaya Han for a situation she put herself in. But I feel bad for her because she has turned cosplay into so much of a job that there is no play anymore. Like, I sincerely doubt that she gets any enjoyment from this anymore.
No.
Like,
yeah,
and that's really sad for me.
Well, and she, like, you know, the funniest part of Heroes of Cosplay was when she criticized Jessica Nigiri for wearing, quote-unquote, sexy outfits and being scantily clad when you consider the outfits that that immediately after making that criticism puts out of the episode. If you're, okay, you know, either...
Cosplay whatever the hell you want.
Cosplay whatever the hell you want. But if you're going to be critical of something, the general rule is don't immediately do it afterwards.
yes, we have a question in the back.
Oh, not a question, but the documentary you were talking about is called Crafting a Secret Identity.
There we go.
It's actually good. You'll still hate Yaya Han afterwards, but you'll understand how she got that way.
All right. Moving on from... Can we get off of Heroes of Cosplay?
Oh my God, yes!
Let's go on to something good.
We'll complain about it after they ruin a convention.
Yes.
And we'll wait till that happens.
What have we got next? Oh,
Nick is up next. Good.
Today the Doctor Who 50th anniversary is going to air.
Night of the Doctor.
And there was a really cool mini-show that was released just these past couple weeks.
Tuesday, I think.
Yeah.
Was it Tuesday or was it last weekend?
Last week, Thursday, because it was Polygon's birthday.
Yeah, we had Night of the Doctor, a 7-minute Doctor Who minisode setting things up, and it was not the Doctor we expected. Paul McGann.
Paul McGann, number eight.
That was the most shocking thing I've seen coming out of a Doctor Who episode.
I'm a doctor, but not the one you were expecting. Yeah. Centric line.
Paul McGann was my first doctor, as I've referenced on previous podcasts. Seeing him again, getting even just 6 minutes more screen time of him was like the best thing ever. Best Christmas ever. It's not even Christmas, but.
And my God, is he has kept himself in shape for this role.
He looks the same. He's just not wearing that wig he hated.
Yeah, I like that they let him use his own hair pretty much. And it was super cool just to. And the fact that we got a proper send-off for him.
Yeah, the Eighth Doctor has always been kind of like they purposefully did not include anything about the Eighth Doctor when they rebooted the series, not because they wanted to keep it in canon, but just because they wanted a fresh start with the new Doctor. And but the Eighth Doctor was the Doctor for a decade, and you know, appearing in spin-off, like there are more Eighth Doctor stories than any other Doctor.
They're just not TV episodes.
Yeah, they're just none of them are, like, there's only just the TV movie and the webisode are the only, like,
screen time
he's got. But he actually has more stories than any other Doctor, because after 96, he was the default Doctor for any of the novels. And so there's a whole set of novels, and then starting in 2001, he started doing the Big Finish audio productions, and they started doing the radio plays. And one of the great things about the Night of the Doctor is he explicitly mentions companions from the spin-off media, specifically the Big Finish audio plays. So
they're canon.
That Big Finish is canon now.
Well, okay, the Big Finish audio stories themselves may not be canon, but like how Highlander the series references Highlander the movie, a version of those events happened. Because if you watch Highlander the movie, Highlander the series cannot happen. Because all the immortals are dead. How we have a series about hundreds of them still killing each other that takes place afterwards. Who cares? It's Highlander, nobody cares. But
what's really cool, though, is right now, it feels like BBC is making up for lost time giving Eighth Doctor some love now, because, like, in the toy line, they're going to be issuing an Eighth Doctor screwdriver soon. They're actually putting out a really cool action figure set of Paul McGann and one of the Daleks from one of the comic books he was in. Like, it's comic book style. It's really cool. Just seeing Paul McGann get some more love, really neat. There was one thing in it, though, that really surprised me in this little mini-sode. I'm so used to Stephen Moffat drawing out his, what's the mystery? What's the mystery? What's the mystery? But in this, it's just, hey, this is who John Hurt is, by the way. Thanks, bye. Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, the fact that Stephen Moffat wrote something that I really liked.
There we go.
That wasn't, well, I guess technically it's not a standalone because it leads into other things. But the fact that Stephen Moffat wrote something that I really, really, really enjoyed.
That hasn't happened since Russell T. Davies was the show.
No, it hasn't, which was shocking to me.
Although, you know, Name of the Doctor, I enjoyed the hell out of Name of the Doctor.
I will say, yeah, it's like, well, the back half of Series 7 was good. Because while I know that you and I disagree very strongly about Amy Pond.
About the Ponds and how they need to go away.
I like them. I just felt they needed better writing.
And a better send-off.
A better send-off. Angels Take Manhattan. Awful.
At least
let's have the Statue of Liberty walk. That's a good idea.
At least there's something worse than the Wedding of River Song now. That's
yeah, I actually like the Wedding of River Song. But
well, you're free to be wrong.
I'm alone in the middle, but I'm the one who gets final edit on the podcast. But we all agree that the Clara half of Series 7 was good and that the Name of the Doctor was good. You have to extend it all the way up.
Oh, I was going to say, like, is it not? And oh, then it is broken. I was like, are your batteries
the
dead?
Other button is gotcha. For when it's all the way down, but in between it doesn't push the button.
Fur's not good at time learning.
My sonic screwdriver.
For those of you at home who can't see us futzing with our toys, Fur is trying to figure out how a sonic screwdriver works.
Because I lent him one of mine because we knew he wouldn't bring one.
Mine's at home in the cub. I think actually my daughter probably has it in her room. She plays with it all the time. It's awesome.
My sonic screwdriver.
You know, I just started introducing Ophelia to Doctor Who. It was a Matt Smith episode, unfortunately. It was the first one she saw, but she really likes David Tennant, though, so I'm pleased with that.
My sonic screwdriver is actually a screwdriver.
The other thing that I really, really liked about Night of the Doctor, and I was really, really, really leery about this going into the 50th, because I think this is what's going to end up happening in the 50th. But now we kind of get a glimpse of how the Time War affected the greater universe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I love the way it sets up like a standard, like, here's the new companion, we're going off an adventure, and she says, no, oh my god, you're a Time Lord.
Yeah,
that was fantastic.
What's the difference between you and the Daleks anymore? At least I'm not a Dalek. What's the difference anymore?
I do have one thing that I'm concerned about, and I guess this could lead into our 50th anniversary speculation, but with us seeing the Time War, I'm really worried this is going to be like what the Clone Wars was for me with Star Wars. It was that really cool thing that I was really happy not seeing, and now that I know what it was, I know it's just disappointment and asthmatic robots.
But also, like, to go back to the Star Wars, like, the origins of Boba Fett. We didn't want that.
Yeah, I didn't.
We didn't want to know where Boba Fett came from. He was cooler when we didn't know.
Yeah, and now that's my biggest concern is that I'm going to see the Time War, and it's just going to be really disappointing.
So we want to move on to
one more thing about Night of the Doctor is that we actually got to go back to Morbius. We had to go back to the episode of.
Brandon Morbius is really, 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 really kind of a controversial episode. It's an early Tom Baker episode. Where Morbius is this Time Lord, the Sisters of Khan are trying to resurrect this Time Lord Morbius and building him a new body, having saved his brain. And, of course, he wants the Doctor's head, because this is the 70s, and they're all on something.
Yeah.
But they challenge each other to, like, a mental battle thing, and a bunch of faces flash on screen. And including the Doctor's previous incarnations and a bunch of other faces. And now, some of those faces are supposed to be Morbius's past regenerations. And Fanon has accepted that all the faces we didn't know were the Doctor's previous, were the Morbius's previous regenerations. But the executive producers at the time intended, like, four of them to be the Doctor's past lives pre-Hartnell. Like, they intended on showing that, but that doesn't work with the numbering. And I had hoped that it would turn out that the whole reason why the 12th Doctor wouldn't be the last one, knowing that John Hurt's the War Doctor and a regeneration in the middle, the hope was is that he'd actually regained regenerations earlier already and had already gone past his original, you know, 13 faces limit.
What he didn't have a choice.
But based on statements that have happened now, I really think the intention is for the 12th Doctor to be his 13th face, like, on purpose. So, sadly, my brain of Morbius theory has been thrown out because, you know, Moffat said to check your DVDs. So I did, and I came up with a theory, and I was wrong, and I'm mad.
But the weird thing, though, with Moffat saying check your DVDs was he's like, you'll figure out who the doctor is. And it was around the time when everyone was saying, so it's a guy between McGann and Eccleston, right? Check your DVDs. So it's a guy between... And then, what do you know, it was a guy between McGann and Eccleston.
Yeah. It's sort of like when you're like, hey, we've got a surprise for you, and the person guesses it. Now you can be like, maybe.
Check your DVDs.
Yeah. Not going
to
say
Well,
yes.
You know it has to be pre-11, because 11 recognizes him.
Exactly. There were also, you should have seen some of the great theories like that were popping up. Because I was in that, I was actually at one point in this minority saying, so you guys know it's between McGann and Eccleston. Well, what if it's a guy before Hartnell? No, it's a guy between McGann and Eccleston.
Yeah, well, and it's because it's,
he's wearing their outfits.
The only other theory was that it was an aged version of McGann's doctor.
Which is really
the same, but we know now with Night of the Doctor that
if I were Paul McGann, I would be incredibly flattered that someone said that I'm going to grow up to be John Hurt, because that is a compliment.
But what if it also means, Paul, you're going to get much shorter?
Chop him off at the knees.
He got short. He did it without choice.
But so I think it's time for rampant speculation.
Wild speculation.
All right. So for those of you at home,
point in the audience when we said for those of you at home?
Because
I highly doubt these fine people live in this resort.
Actually, Archimedes sometimes sleeps over there. I've seen him do it.
Well, no, I always gesture like that when I say that when we're recording, but you guys just can't see it.
You point out like this when you're recording.
Do you point to your wife when you do that? Like, it's Krista?
No, she's in the living room.
Krista, you stay right there. You're my audience while I'm recording this. You at home.
We release these episodes on Sunday nights, and this one's going to be no different. This episode's not going to get released until I get home from this convention. But we're recording it at, right now it's 10:30 a.m. on Saturday morning.
The 23rd, the day of the 50th anniversary,
which
means that the special
this afternoon.
3 hours? 4 hours?
I don't remember if what I'm remembering is the Eastern or Central time zone time slot for the show. Anyways, this afternoon, hours from now.
Yeah, we haven't seen it yet. Nobody has seen it yet.
But it would be really amiss for us not to talk about the 50th anniversary special.
So what we're going to do is speculate based on nothing but what comes into our brain parts.
We're going to tell you what happens in the episode without ever having seen it, knowing only the basic guest star list and science.
So what I'm going to assume is going to happen is we're going to start off with the episode. We're going to be in the alternate dimension that.
Well, because they're still in the time in the Doctor's time.
They're in the time stream.
Name of the Doctor.
Yeah. So, but this is before the whole events I think happen where Rose gets lost in the Bad Wolf Bay or whatever. It's going to happen before that. However, she will have been away from the 10th Doctor for quite some time to pursue her career as a pop star. As we can see, based on the images that we've seen come out of the promo stuff, it is not going well, and she's been in rehab for quite some time.
What?
Have you seen the images? She looks like she's just, like, been digging around in a dumpster for about 3 weeks.
Wow! Wow!
Yeah, I was going to make jokes about Billy Piper's teeth, but not anymore. That was just too low.
But, no, the 10th Doctor comes and rescues Rose Tyler out of rehab.
You hate women!
We're going wildly speculating here. I'm just going as wild as I possibly can. Rose Tyler had a failed pop star career. I'm not saying Billy Piper did. They're different people. She's an actress.
Trey, do your thing. First, stop talking.
Okay. That's how it's going to open, though. That's exactly how it's going to open. Ted is going to come rescue Rose Tyler.
I disagree entirely. It's going to open in the time stream. The Doctor is slowly sipping a cup of tea. Clara is staring at him, going, "Shouldn't we get out of here?" And he says, "No." That is the cold open, right there.
And then 10.
Flashback.
And then 10 saves Rose Tyler from rehab.
No. The year is 2006. And it's, yeah, that's the Rose 10 season. The year is 2006, and I don't know. They're leaving New York
again. Why not?
And TARDIS has the cloister bell go off because that's what happens when bad things happen.
Yep.
The Eye of Harmony is opening. It turns out that Eric Roberts, playing Bruce, former host of The Master, has been trapped in the Eye of Harmony this whole time.
Oh, no.
And he's pissed.
John Hurt then wanders on set, asking where his rent check is.
I'm getting there.
Worked on I Claudius.
I'm getting there. So they discover Bruce, and they realize that they have disrupted a fixed time in space because Bruce was supposed to have died back in 1999, filmed in 96.
Everything in the late 90s was filmed on took place on New Year's Eve. It just happened.
Yeah, because the Eighth Doctor movie takes place in 1999.
He partied like it's 1999.
On New Year's Eve, as one Mr. Philip J. Fry gets frozen in the cryo.
Right. Anyways, so they have to return Eric Roberts as Bruce back to before the Time War. And by doing so, they accidentally intercept Eleven and Clara in the time stream. And thus, crash into the Time War where John Hurt stubs his toe. And only Eric Roberts can save 10, 11, Clara, and Rose from the War Doctor.
John, at this same time, John Hurt is actually trying to force Derek Jacobi, who they somehow got back as the Master, who is quite shocked to see... what was Eric Roberts' character's name again?
Bruce.
Yeah, who is quite shocked to see Bruce, his former incarnation, and is hoping that he has double Master powers now. But things get really bad when the Yetis show up out of nowhere.
Because we've had the Great Intelligence, and he's been in the time stream, so of course
the Yetis are there.
In the time stream. So the Yetis show up completely out of nowhere with like these super time guns, and they're kicking the Daleks' butts everywhere.
And for some reason, one of the Yetis is wearing Troughton's fur coat. Just as a shout-out to the old fans.
No. The shout-out that's going to happen is that you're going to see a Quark wandering around in the background. Get on it, Moffat. We need the Quark speech.
And an original series Cyberman wets his pants.
And then, what's going to happen?
And then, David Tennant and Matt Smith go around yelling wibbly wobbly timey wimey at each other for like 20 minutes. And it's just that.
Yeah.
And then, at some point in the episode, 10 yells Geronimo.
And 11
yells Alonzi.
And then they both look at each other. Rose and Clara are going to be looking at each other like, do you see what I put up with all the time? It's going to be hysterical.
And then 10 and 11 make out.
It's just going to be them making out for 15 minutes.
And then John Hurt will get
And then John Hurt joins in.
Then Colin Baker's going to show up. Everyone's going to look at him and yell, you get out of here.
Out of my cannon.
He's going to get retconned out of existence.
Well, actually, here's the thing. Okay, so though we're going to have... Okay, so Peter Capaldi is the 12th Doctor
of
the 13th Fest. But they need to... So Peter Capaldi is going to be the 13th face of the character, the 12th Doctor. He's supposed to then be the final regeneration because after 12 regenerations, the 13th face...
Capaldi the Valiard?
Well, here's my thought. What happens if... The Time War, somehow, the interference in the Time War by 10 and 11 causes all the regenerations back to Davison to revert. And Capaldi then regenerates from the 5th Doctor, eliminating Colin Baker!
That'll teach you not to complain about being in the 50th, Colin.
And I know Paul McGann's not been asked to be involved. Bum again just ain't telling you shit, Colin.
to their credit, like...
Technically, he's not in the 50th.
It blows my mind that they were able to keep it secret.
He was on set for 2 days.
Yeah.
And the press asked him, and he said, oh, no. I was just in costume for fun. I don't know what you're talking about.
Which, I mean... I just imagine that Paul McGann is at home just on his days off running around as the Eighth Doctor. Just someday I'll get a call back. I'll be on screen again.
Like just every day when he gets home, he says hi to his wife, but then like calls his agent. Hey, did the Doctor Who guys call back yet? Paul, you ask this literally every day at 3 o'clock. So yes or no?
Colin and Peter might have given up on life, but I haven't.
Well, you know, I mean, although it's to be fair, Peter Davison has reappeared in the new series.
They did have an comeback.
He looks okay.
Yeah.
He was even at DragonCon doing the 11th Doctor speech from the Pandorica opens,
and that was
awesome.
That was great.
But anyway, wild speculation. I don't know. Yaya Han's going to be involved in this.
Yeah, no, Yaya Han.
They're gonna crash into a convention. Yaya Han's gonna be there, and she's gonna criticize their outfits for not being accurate.
And then she gets killed by a Dalek.
Yes, woo!
Because she's not good enough for the Yetis.
Yetis.
No. She doesn't deserve
Yetis riding
Yeti.
Daleks. Yetis riding Daleks.
If you would like to draw Yetis riding Daleks, please go to contact.thonline.
No, nerdanti.thonline.com/contact.
Click on the contact form, something, write to us of Yetis riding Daleks. Nick's just given up at this point. He's done.
You messed this up twice.
I'm
like
going to mess it up
within 20 minutes of each other.
He's determined to never...
Never going to get it right. That's the point.
Okay.
You're a horrible human being.
So the 50th anniversary, there you go. Don't even have to watch it.
Explained it. It's going to be... nothing is going to make sense up until the 59th minute when they're going to hit a magic button and everything is going to be okay.
No, Stephen Moffat, don't!
Yeah. I'm really excited to see David Tennant as the Doctor again.
I cannot wait to see David again.
Well, I'm glad, it's interesting because he looks different, though.
He's
actually playing the Doctor, which is to be clear, because there was always a chance that he was going to play the human spin-off version that's in the alternate reality now.
I remember that was talked about briefly.
That's literally living with Rose. So, I mean, that was always a possibility, but no, he looks like he's got his sonic screwdriver in the trailer, so... It looks like it's just intersecting with second season, second series.
It's going to be somewhere in there.
I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
I really like second series, though. It was a little uneven at parts, but the episodes that were good were phenomenal. So,
as long as we're not going to talk about, like, Love and Monsters.
I liked Love and Monsters.
I wasn't a fan.
Trey, I think you might be the only person who likes Love and Monsters.
Yeah, didn't we have...
That guy liked it. Three in the audience that liked it. My wife did. Over there, so I'm right.
I just couldn't get over that Moaning Myrtle was in the episode and that her voice actually sounds like that.
Haven't seen any of the period drama she's in, have you?
No, I haven't. Yeah, anyway.
Well, right. It's okay. So the guy who played Elton is also in the show Hustle.
Yeah,
I'm a big fan of Hustle.
He's been in a couple other things that I've seen too.
He did an episode of Life on Mars. He did.
We got mail.
We actually got a whole 2 emails this week, and none from Steve.
None from Vomit Hat Steve,
which makes us sad.
Which means that we did get one from Vomit Hat Steve.
We did.
And we'll read it shortly.
And we'll
but
read
first,
it.
Our first email comes from Michael Portman. The subject is Thai opinion. And the message says, so, seeing as you are the number one source for classy dress code at podcasting, the world needs to know. Thoughts on the double tie as seen in Back to the Future Part 2. For those who aren't familiar, the double tie is exactly what it sounds like. Imagine if I had a tie right next to this tie, because that was a thing that Michael J. Fox's older self was wearing.
Who, by the way, did not look like anything like what Michael J. Fox actually turned out looking.
Wearing in the future during Back to the Future Part 2. I think that is like the pinnacle of what the 80s ended up being. I think that scene, I'm like, the 80s can't get any more 80s than this. I would never wear it, but I wouldn't just, I'm not saying I would never wear it.
We got 2 more years till those flying cars need to show up.
Yep.
And that 3D Jaws.
Give me a hoverboard.
Or if you're on Facebook, you're going to see a post that says, tomorrow's the day that they're back to the future. And I'm going to unfriend like three people that do it because it happens every single goddamn day.
It happens every October because they only Photoshop the year most of the time.
Fair enough.
Although they did it, like, it did an April run once, I think a May run once, but, like, yeah.
But the double tie, yeah.
I think one tie is enough for any man, woman, or child.
I'm against anything in Back to the Future Part 2.
I'm not.
Yeah, it wasn't awful. I mean, it's definitely the weakest of the trilogy. But.
I am all for the part where it leads into Back to the Future Part 3.
Okay, that's good. I'll give you that.
Which was shot concurrently.
Was it?
They shot two and three back to back. Because Back to the Future 2 isn't really its own movie. It's a bridging film. It's a film to bridge. And also,
well,
I think they got a little...
It's an unpleasant way to spend an hour and a half.
Well, no, but they also got a little obsessed with how many times they can put Michael J. Fox on screen at once. Because, like, the split-screen stuff they used is so primitive by today's standards, but it was amazing special effects in the 80s. And the fact that it still looks good, like, you know, it looks convincing.
It's not helped by the fact that it came out when not everyone had a VCR, so they had to rehash huge portions of the first movie to make you remember it, but now in modern era...
And that's why you keep switching. Crispin Glover magically keeps changing into another actor in that film, because Crispin Glover does not actually appear in Back to the Future Part 2, except for scenes cut that they used from Back to the Future Part 1, and Crispin Glover sued them for using his image without his permission.
But not double ties.
No. So we should go to the next letter that's right there.
Okay, we got this next one is from Zaro.
Zero.
Zero.
I like to say it.
Okay.
I don't know if I'm right.
Comics and the Almighty Retcon. So, since DC went into the New 52, I have been hesitant to check out any of the newer series due to the massive shakeup, the whole Harley thing, the whole Batwoman thing. I was curious to know if there were any comics post-New 52 worth checking out, and more importantly, what your thoughts are on the retcon. Good idea, bad idea. Bad idea. Really, really bad idea.
Overall, it was a stupid... Okay, so, like, their intentions kind of made sense, but then they did it completely wrong. The idea was to reset everything so you could introduce it to new readers, and everybody thought that meant, like, a larger audience than the 18 to 34-year-old men who already had the money of. No. It refocused, and I think a lot of things are bad. I will say, in New 52, you know, I know the Batwoman writer thing is, you know, is kind of a mess. But the new writer who is coming on is actually really good. So I'm disappointed that it happened, but I will say Batwoman is probably still going to be a book worth checking out.
I heard good things about Scott Snyder's Batman, but yeah. Scott Snyder's Swamp Thing might be one of the worst things I've seen in my life.
Yeah, I will say one of the gems of the New 52 is one that is Gail Simone's The Movement, which could have happened post, or it has literally nothing to do with... It has some pre-continuity, like, if it had happened in the old continuity, some of the characters would have had ties, like Tremor is a character who had appeared previously, but for the most part, it's an original, like, new story. It's a new story that hasn't been told before with mostly new characters, and the characters who aren't new, you don't need to know anything about going into the movement. Well. And that's why, like, I've been a big fan, like, you know, for the six issues that have come out so far. I don't think the New 52 had to happen for this book to happen. I would have loved to have gotten this book in old continuity where they hadn't screwed up, like, the Amazons.
The stuff of the retcon, like, some of the characters got reworked from the ground up, like, giving Wonder Woman a dad is a terrible choice.
Yeah,
giving,
that should not happen.
Giving,
like, no,
Wonder Woman a dad
they
who
ruined
is a serial
Wonder
rapist
origin.
Is even worse. That's unacceptable. But then you get, like, Batman and Green Lantern, their pasts almost haven't changed at all,
right.
Except Batman went through five Robins in 5 years, which, by the way, Ed Brubaker, who was writing Winter Soldier and used to write the Robin comic, was like, oh my god, I want to get a job at DC again just to write Batman going Robins.
How many Robins are canon?
I don't know if Stephanie still is.
Stephanie's, I don't know.
But
Stephanie's is no longer a Robin.
But he still went through Dick, Jason, Tim, and Damian have all happened. And Damian was conceived during this time, even though he's 10, I guess. So maybe he wasn't conceived during this time.
He was made in a test tube.
Yeah, no, none of it makes... Don't break things.
Son of the Demon was a good book. Sorry.
Well, there's weird stuff going on with Damian. Like, he's still alive in some of the future comics they're doing. So it's just a matter of time before Damian comes back. Literally. But 70 Brown is coming back as a spoiler. So,
I know, we talked about in the previous episode.
We talked about it in the previous episode. Exciting. But I'll say also, so I don't like the removal of Oracle from, like, the uncrippling of Barbara Gordon I thought was unnecessary. But I will say I've heard really good things about Gail Simone's run on Batgirl because, frankly, Gail Simone could pretty much write anything and it would end up being good. I've yet to find anything of hers that hasn't been an excellent book.
Because I know she's a regular listener to our show.
Of course.
Again, please write a Wonder Woman movie. You can do
it. Well, she has specifically stated that she will never write a movie because she doesn't think she has the skill set to write a film.
So,
to be fair, though, she used to be a person. You know, she started out being just a person who didn't theoretically have the skill set to write a comic book. She was just running a Women in Refrigerators website and was a hairdresser. So, you know, and she's turned out to be one of the best comic writers of a generation. So
on a weird side note, a lot of people think, like, Wonder Woman's best writers are, like, Gail Simone and George Perez. Do you have to have a G name to write Wonder Woman well? Is that, like, a prerequisite?
Yes.
Well, that means I'm out.
All right.
All right, we have a letter from a... We hope that answers your question.
Yes.
Zero.
Yeah, Zero.
Zero.
So
Zero.
Zero is...
We're not on board.
But we have our third... Now, every fortnightly episode... That Vomit Hat Steve needs to write us, or else I'm going to keep making up things written by him. And for the last few episodes, I've been reading random parts of books. I've gone fiction, I've gone nonfiction, and now I'm going terrible. No one has told me what books I have been reading from.
Someone who has a guess in the audience.
So I revealed the first book I read last episode.
All right.
The first one we did was American Gods. Does anybody in the room know what last fortnight's book was that Steve's... What? Oh, my God! Someone...
The guess was The World is Flat, and that is correct.
It's a book about economics. It's... that I happen to have on my shelf.
I actually fell asleep while you were reading that passage.
You win no prize. Because I have nothing to give you.
That was Archimize, our co-host from the Not-Fur episode.
I'm surprised anybody knew that book well enough to remember it. You know, it's like it's one thing to tell me that someone has read that book because it was on the New York Times best-selling list, but to recognize it based off the random passage I selected was impressive. Well, you can have this piece of my water bottle.
Just toss it at him; he might catch it. Don't hit any of
No, I'm gonna hit Ronnie in the front row. I can say it right. after I was criticized for saying her name wrong when she wrote into the show once. All right, so this fortnight's letter from Vomit Hat Steve. I have little patience and even less free time, so I try not to waste that time on efforts that don't further my goals. I have, in fact, adhered to something of a short attention span theater approach to the martial arts in the last decade and a half. Most of my accomplishments in this field have been, for lack of a better word, unofficial. I have no impressive credentials, and I can provide no compelling appeals to authority in trying to persuade you to listen to me. All I can do is tell you earnestly what I think and why, substantiating my opinions with logic and reason. I can't read the next sentence because it reveals the title, but...
Thank you, Vomit Hat Steve.
Thanks, Vomit Hat Steve.
So, for Nerd and Tie Live, I am Professor Fur.
I'm Trey Dorn.
And I'm Nick Izumi.
Thank you all for coming out and hearing us. We'll see you in a fortnight.
Keep on sparking in the free world.
Stop saying that.
Woo!